The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the renowned website builder that helps you share your story with the world in the most beautiful way. Establish a personal brand, portfolio, or e-commerce store at squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
It's Football Weekly Extra. What up in today's audio lucky dip? Well, there's Italy, England and all the international news to tide you over till June. Plus, as club football returns, we look at what awaits as the decisive final push gets underway right across Europe. There's big games this weekend. Le Classique en France, De Classica in Germany, Napoli, Roma in Serie A and in the Premier League. Well, all of them, because it's the Premier League, but particularly Arsenal, Liverpool and particularly, of course, for Sterling. Will he get to grips with the Emirates as well as he has nominative determinism? That question and many more answered in this Football Weekly Extra. Wow, I feel strangely excited about today's Football Weekly Extra, and I hope you do too, listeners. Perhaps you'll join me on the enthusiasm express when I reveal to you that it welcomes back Barry Glendening today.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. There's James Horncastle, despite the fact that he's not well.
I am indeed.
What you got, James?
I've just got the incurable common cold.
There's nothing worse, really.
No.
And this is exciting. Nick Miller making your very, very first ever appearance on the pod.
Hello, James.
Which way is it going to go for you, I wonder?
Well, yeah. It's going to be fascinating to find out, isn't it?
All right. Good luck. Fingers crossed, eh?
Thanks very much.
Shall we pitch you the first question, Nick?
Oh, why not?
Yeah. There were internationals going on. Some people, I noticed, learnt five things. Some people learnt as many as 10 things from the internationals. How many did you learn?
I learnt 3.
Okay, what were they?
One of them was about Andros Townsend.
Ooh, what was that?
I didn't really learn anything so much as I don't know if he's any good.
Oh.
Because he looks like he should be good. He's very fast and quite skillful and can beat players. But then he usually just uses that pace and skill to go past someone and then hoof the ball into the stands. And so he might look good, but he actually seems terrible.
Tim Sherwood said that's what's good about him, that 9 times out of 10 he'll beat his man and put it into the stands, but 1 time out of 10 he will deliver the game-winning cross or shot.
In sabermetrics fashion, is that 1 in 10, is that enough?
It's not a great conversion rate, is it?
Is it not?
No.
Okay.
He's now scored as many goals in, I think, about 7 games for England as he had as in 60-odd for Tottenham.
Really?
3 goals.
That's interesting, isn't it?
He really told Paul Merson, who said he shouldn't get anywhere near the squad.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether that was in his locker in Turin before the game.
He said
it's possibly the least exciting Twitter spat I've seen in a long time. But yeah,
he said today that as soon as he knew he was in the squad, and as soon as he heard Merson say that, he'd wanted to get that tweet out.
Wow!
Right.
So he showed him.
He certainly did. Far more exciting, surely, was the appearance on Twitter of a photograph of a 12-year-old boy that looked exactly like the tattoo on Ryan Mason's arm. Did you see that?
No.
Oh, it's chilling. You've seen that, I'm sure, Nick.
I have seen that, and it's exactly as you describe.
Is
yeah,
the
he's
tattoo
got a,
of him.
No, he's got a tattoo. I'm guessing of a girl or a loved one on his arm, and this random viewer said, "This is really disconcerting. Why has he got me when I was 12?" And he's posted a link to a picture from yesteryear, and it's identical. Really scary. Anyway. That's not one of the things we learned this week.
Alan Partridge thing with that obsessive had a big tattoo of him on his chest.
I don't think so. Anyway, so that was one of the things, Nick, you learned, and it was great. What other things? Or 2 things you actually learned?
Two things I actually learned.
Yeah.
Well, there was. Are we still sticking with England? Or?
You can do if you want.
Well, there was. I watched the Netherlands Turkey game on Saturday, the Netherlands Holland were absolutely terrible, and they were playing long ball, stick it up in the mixer for the big man.
That's very much the Dutch style these days.
Yeah. But then they beat Spain on Tuesday night. So whether that will buy Gus Hiddink some time, I'm not sure.
Second time in a row, of course, that they've had a big win over Spain. This was a sizable win, wasn't it? 2-0. Did you see this, James?
I didn't see it. I saw the highlights.
All right, then. De Vrij very much featuring in that.
Yeah, the new Stam. The new Stam. Not least because he plays for Lazio.
Yeah, all right. Great. So that's the Netherlands back, is it?
Oh, well, definitely, yes, they'll win Euro 2016.
Brilliant. Oh, that's good to know. Anything else? Anything else? What else have I got from the international? Belgium beat Israel. That's good news for Wales, of course.
I have to talk Portugal getting beaten by Cape Verde.
Yeah, but it's a friendly. They didn't bring any of their players, did they?
Still, they had four debutants.
Mm-hmm.
But it's I think Cape Verde are the first former Portuguese colony to actually beat them.
Really? Yeah. So, from that point of view, that's interesting, isn't it?
And, their rise... I mean, they have been at the African Cup of Nations a couple of times, I think, now. But their rise is from, 108th in the FIFA rankings to they were inside the top 20 at one stage.
Really?
So, quite the up-and-comers.
The comers, yeah. Okay, good. I mentioned Belgium beating Israel, which is good for Wales, because it meant that Israel are now, I think, 2 points behind them. But also, Vincent Kompany getting a red card in that game, which means that he'll miss
the game against Wales.
In Cardiff?
Yeah, in June.
In June. All right. And, of course, Italy and England drew. And what did we get from this? Barry, did you watch this game?
I did, yeah. Again, international friendly. Mm. It was hard to know what to make of it. It was reasonably entertaining. Second half was decent. First half, not so good. I was slightly puzzled afterwards by some of the criticism Roy Hodgson got for, say, playing Theo Walcott out of position. When surely this is, if you want to experiment or try out players in different roles to what they're used to, that is the time to do that.
Hmm.
Because it doesn't really matter whether you win or lose. And yeah, I thought some of the criticism he took for that was a bit odd.
Criticism from the likes of Jonathan Wilson, who made many points about that. One of them was that, maybe it's better to be fine-tuning in a friendly than doing this willful experimenting. And he said, especially against Italy's 3-5-2, Hodgson should never have gone for a midfield diamond, because if there's one thing that is certain in tactics, it's that a 3-5-2 will always be a midfield diamond. I didn't know that. I mean, he explains it very
well.
Everybody knows that.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah. That's why 3-5-2 became so popular in Italy, because everyone was playing a diamond.
Right. Boom. Right there. Okay, what else don't I know? What are the truths about football? I mean, I've got never bet on the last round of Italian football when there's relegation involved. Or indeed the last month or two. Uh-huh. In fact, any Italian football, just don't.
But some would say that's possibly the best time to have a bet, because you have a fair idea what's going to happen.
If they're allowing them, yes. Mm. Yeah.
I've always had a problem with this thing about scoring before halftime. It's the best time to score.
Why?
Well, any time is a good time to score, but I would suggest that if you are going to score, just before halftime is the worst time.
Oh, because it gives the opposition time to actually...
It gives them 15 minutes to regroup, sort the problems out. It also sort of stifles your momentum.
But, Barry, here I come at you with, given that you're most vulnerable after you just scored, surely that's the perfect time to score, because it means you're most vulnerable when you're in the safety of your own locker room and the other team can't do anything about it.
Oh, I'll give you that.
All right.
So would you rather them score immediately after halftime?
Ooh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ideally, I'd have them score sort of just before full-time.
James, do you have an irrefutable truth about, a truth universally acknowledged, if you will, about the world of football?
Well, this idea of peaking, I suppose, at 26, players always peak at, 26, 27, 28?
Right.
When it's all relative, really, isn't it, to the individual player. Like Michael Owen probably peaked when he was 18, and that sort of thing.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I peaked on Christmas Eve.
Did you?
Yeah. Oh, but I see, right, yeah, absolutely. Nick?
Well, we kind of mentioned it earlier. There's still this idea about Holland playing lovely, silky, attacking total football when that died a few years ago.
Mm.
Yeah, the commentators, as you know, they launched their 57th ball towards Bas Dost on Saturday, were saying, well, the Dutch fans won't be happy with this, with their liking for total football.
It's right up there with an uncharacteristic mistake from Vincent Kompany,
exactly,
isn't it? And
a
strangely poor defensive performance from Italy, although this one wasn't, actually. Let's just finish off our little international segment on Italy-England. Barry, you were going to throw something in there.
Oh, no, I'm not sure if it's a truism or not, but, you know, when there's a big brawl and commentators say that nobody likes to see scenes like this.
Right.
Which that's just not true.
Right.
But it seems to be generally accepted.
Yeah, otherwise why would people watch WWE?
Exactly.
Yeah, which Ben and John Ashton did together the other night, and they had a great time, says producer Ben. So there you go. Now, Italy-England... All right, so amongst the other things that Jonathan Wilson said was, if fit, Carrick must play. Does that get a tick from you guys?
I've always been a Carrick fan. He seems to divide opinion. Well, he does divide opinion, but I think he's an asset to any team.
Right. And this was a better performance from England? Certainly compared to the last time they took on Italy.
Oh, well, certainly, yeah. With Carrick, I think he probably should play, but Hodgson has this idea that Jack Wilsh is the man to play in that position if he ever stays fit.
But, right.
You know, I think Carrick is clearly better at it.
Okay.
Not Phil Jones.
Not Phil Jones.
Right. No. Anything else you'd throw at this? For example, from the Italian point of view, after their draw in the previous match away in Bulgaria, this was, I think, received very positively.
Yeah, I mean, it was experimental. He had the same objective as Hodgson did, to try some new things out, and they seemed to work. Pelle and Eder played quite well up front.
The midfield looked good as well, no? Soriano and...
Valdifiori certainly, on making his debut at, 29, the Empoli sort of playmakers, seems to be a much better stand-in for Pirlo in that role than Marco Verratti, which I think a lot of people were surprised by. Verratti played poorly against Bulgaria, and Valdifiori did really well against England. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to read too much into this game because, you know, both did field experimental lineups. Italy played well for 70 minutes, and then when England changed things, and when Jones went back into defence, Carrick came on, when Barkley came on and Rooney went up front, they played better. So, meh.
All right, meh, as you say. Perhaps we should just finish off by getting a little bit excited about another England game, the under-21s, and their clash with the German under-21s in Middlesbrough. This was quite a thriller, wasn't it? So much so that I'm not even sure what the final score was. It was 3-2.
England won 3-2.
3-2. And there were some cracking goals along the way. Hoffmann's for the Germans. And then people getting very excited. Here's Mark William Reid, for example, saying, Jimbo, it'd be criminal not to mention the under-21s 11-man pass and play goal against Germany under-21s, a move finished off by James Ward-Prowse. And people picking up on this and suggesting, as indeed Mark William Reid does, that maybe the under-21s is going to give us the team we so desperately crave in terms of, you know, possession and almost tiki-taka-esque ability to torment. Was it that, or was it just endlessly passing back instead of making runs forward?
I think it was endlessly passing back. I think it was at that 35 passes in that goal, and the majority of them were across the defence as, you know, they tried to. But, you know, they did keep the ball rather than hoofing it into the stands.
So, yeah.
You know, that's something.
I mean, if you're struggling to pick apart a well-organised German defence, which I'm guessing they were being German.
Well-organised, there you go, there's another truism.
There you are, right. Well, then, I think it's entirely laudable that they should buy their time. And then when they saw a weakness, pow, they pounced. And it was very direct. Once the opportunity was there, pow. I thought it was a good call.
So you think they were biding their time?
I believe so, yeah. They didn't find a way through. And so, rather than you say, just like going, well, we'll put it in the mixer.
So a patient possessing game rather than sort of running around like headless chickens, all passion and intensity.
Exactly.
And other sort of truism about the Premier League.
Right. Anyway, right. That's it for international football until June, I think. By which time we'll have forgotten all of this. And now it's time to take a little pause and then get our club heads on.
This new year, make a resolution to dust off that big idea. This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the powerful platform that gives you simple tools to create a gorgeous website in minutes. With elegant templates, Getty image integration, and marketing tools, you can make your ideas resonate with the world. Try it at squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
This is where it gets exciting. International break out of the way. No more breaks. No more breaks between now and the end of the season in the Premier League and right across Europe. So it's interesting. You know, we're into the final push now. 8 games to go in England. How many things are still to be resolved, Barry? Title, potentially? A couple of top 4 places? Maybe a couple of bottom 3 places?
I would be very surprised if Chelsea let the title slip. I think Sunderland proved last season that survival is still very much up for grabs for all 3 teams at the bottom of the Premier League.
All right.
As unlikely as their escape was, they've shown it can be done. They were rock bottom and adrift at a later stage than this in the season. And still
they were 7 points off, but with 2 games in hand. Leicester only have the 1.
And that's against Chelsea. Mm.
So basically, everything's still up for grabs.
Right. Yeah.
Certainly in those top 4 positions. I mean, Liverpool beaten by Man United at home last time out. Now 5 points off the top 4, but they're away at Arsenal this weekend, which does look like the standout fixture of this round. Is it their last chance for a top four place, James Horncastle?
If they were to get a draw, I think they would still be alive.
Still be alive. Depends what the other team.
Their momentum was only really checked by that great United performance at Anfield.
Right.
Hitherto, they had been excellent. But, I don't know, I think Arsenal are in such great form at the moment.
Mm.
Six straight wins, Giroud scoring, picking up some of the slack that we've seen with Sanchez being sort of in that red zone that Wenger was talking about, even though he's improved of late. But to be honest, I can see Arsenal winning this game. But I don't think they'll win it in necessarily the way we expect them to, because whenever they've played sort of the teams in and around this sort of top four race, they've sort of conceded possession and looked to play on the counter, haven't they? I think they'll be doing that.
All right. It's going to be an emotional game this for Raheem Sterling as he surveys his potential new surroundings, no? What do you think? Right.
I don't know what to say, really.
All right.
I think it's very unlikely he'll be sold to Arsenal. But, his interview with the BBC was interesting this week and has made headlines.
What did he say, Barry?
Well, he said he was flattered by Arsenal's interest. He said he didn't want to be seen as a 20-year-old money grabber who's only interested in talking about the cars he's going to drive and whatnot. And, I think by and large he basically came out of the interview in which he said he didn't want to be seen as a 20-year-old money grabber as something of a 20-year-old money grabber. Mm-hmm. But I think he's perfectly entitled to look for as much money as he wants. I would imagine if he looks around the Liverpool dressing room and sees various players earning way more money than he does, who are probably not as good as he is, then why shouldn't he? He holds all the cards when it comes to negotiation, and I would imagine he'll probably leave Liverpool this summer.
Do you think that there was a suggestion that maybe Brendan Rodgers sidelined him, or at least pushed him out of the centre of Liverpool's attack against Man United because of the ongoing contract dispute? I've no idea if that's the case or not, but do you think after the performance that Liverpool had against Man United that he'll focus much more on Sterling in this game, Rodgers?
Well, I think so, because Daniel Sturridge is out, I think so. But
it's a safe bet that he is. We had the stat last show, no, that he's out every 4.3 games
for
Liverpool.
Which will presumably mean that Rodgers will stick Sterling up front again rather than trying to play him on the wing back, which he said a few months ago he tried Sterling win back and it didn't work. So, he tried it again in the biggest game of the season. so presumably he'll play up front again.
All right. What else do we expect to see? You with James's idea that even at home they're going to surrender the initiative to Liverpool, let them come at them and then pick them apart?
Yes.
Right. Good. Oh, it's a big week for Liverpool. If they win this, especially if Man United were to have a problem against Aston Villa, who they'll be hosting, they'll be right back in top four contention. But then they have that FA Cup replay at Blackburn on Wednesday. Wow. Both games, I think, won't feature Skrtel and Gerrard, both of whom are suspended. And now, Gerrard, there's a body of opinion that that's actually a bonus for Rodgers. It will simplify things. I mean, I'm not being funny, but they just were playing better without him anyway.
No, I can see it.
What about Skrtel, though? What about Skrtel?
Cole O'Toole will come in for him, presumably. He's shown that he's a more than adequate substitute already this season. And when he came in the game against Real Madrid, he was arguably one of the best players on the pitch. And I wouldn't be too concerned about the absence of Skrtel. If anything, it probably considerably decreases Arsenal's chances of winning a penalty.
It was Skrtel who scored the 96th minute equaliser in this game when they faced each other in what turned out to be a 2-2 draw at Anfield. When was that? November?
December.
My memory, eh? Anyway, it could be a big weekend for Liverpool, especially if they were to get the result at the Emirates and Man United were to come a cropper when they host Aston Villa at Old Trafford. Is that going to happen, Nick?
It could do. If Tim Sherwood manages to kind of imbue this belief that he has in himself in his Villa side. If you look into Tim Sherwood's eyes and you see the steely look of a man who's absolutely convinced of his own ability, but no one else really seems to be.
It's an essential quality for a manager.
It's an essential quality, yes.
Well, the last time Tim Sherwood took an injury-ravaged team to Old Trafford, during the sort of fledgling stages of a managerial stint, he came away with a win. That
Boom.
Was with Spurs in January last year.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be hugely surprised if he did it again.
Really,
though? Say. Yeah.
Why? On what do you base that? Or is it the part of your colon? Just so I know, is there something about...
I can't really think of any logical reason why Aston Villa...
How about the form of Benteke and Delph? Delph looking good for England, no? And Benteke for Belgium. I think he scored goals and stuff, didn't he?
I suppose that's the issue for Villa, is that they have more injuries than any other team at the moment. I think they've got 11 players out. And the players that they do have did play a lot of minutes over the international fortnight as well.
Right.
So he hasn't really been able to work with a lot of players over that fortnight when you expect a manager in trouble, a relatively new manager at that club would want more time with his players.
Right. You do sound rough, James. So well done for making it in. Of course, if any player shone over the international break, it was Marouane Fellaini. Marouane Fellaini, who was in terrific form for United before he headed off to join Belgium, and then he scored 3 goals in 2 games for them. Wow. You know that, Nick. I mean, you were all over Belgium over the international break, weren't you?
Yes.
Will he start up front, do you think, or just behind Rooney or something in this game?
Well, presumably he'll play in midfield again, as he has in the last couple of games.
Right, but in a more advanced midfield role. Clearly, that's what I'm hinting at. Super. Falcao.
Wayne Rooney's has a pretty remarkable scoring record against Villa, actually. At Old Trafford, he scored 8 in his last 6 games.
Hmm.
Which doesn't bode particularly well for my theory that Villa might get a result out of, or might win this game.
My impression is that Villa often come close to pulling off a real shot, and then something like that Machado goal happens, and they end up ultimately losing. But it'll be really interesting to see what happens. It'd be fascinating, especially if your prediction goes through. At Man City, meanwhile, Monday night they'll be playing. They have to wait till Monday, by which time they could be in fourth place, on the verge of dropping out even of the Champions League positions. And they're away at Crystal Palace, under the lights at Selhurst Park. Fixtures of this nature down there in South East London tend to be very exciting. I'm thinking about last season. Do you remember that crazy Crystal Palace Fulham game? And then, of course, the Liverpool 3-3. They beat Chelsea there. That was all last year. This year, of course, they've recently beaten Spurs there, haven't they?
Yeah, they beat Liverpool there as well, there in the season, did they?
Yes, I'm getting nods about that, yeah. And when you look at City, with their record on the road, they've lost their last 3. Burnley, Barcelona.
What are you saying here, James?
I'm just saying, could this be another one of their slip-ups?
Are you putting it out there? Are
I reckon,
you confidently
all right, I'm going to say
stating
Palace,
for the record that
Palace
Crystal Palace are going to beat?
Palace get a draw.
That is a hot take.
Do you think?
I think so.
I talked myself into
it. I thought you were tracking back there a little bit.
No,
I thought
no.
you were going for the win.
No.
Instead of a draw.
I think a draw.
You're not that confident in Pardiola.
Well, actually, having said that...
Well, you see, he's already labelled my non-prediction that Villa might beat Manchester United. You said I predicted they would.
Right.
Well, I quite clearly didn't. And now after...
We all heard that, yeah? Hang on a second.
But the last time Tim Sherwood took an injury-ravaged team to Old Trafford during the sort of fledgling stages of a managerial stint, he came away with a win. That was at Spurs in January last year.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be hugely surprised if he did it again.
Sounds pretty definitive to me, Barry. Anyway... Crystal Palace, Man City.
Yeah, you've talked me into it now as well. I'm inclined. But I'm, James Horncastle was saying, I'm sort of, I thought you
I was
were building
get
up to
well,
a
Well, let's just see if we
win.
Can whip ourselves up into that kind of, visionary positivity. For example, Palace, they've only won 1 of their last 5 at Selhurst Park. But Zaha's in good form. I'm not sure how they are on injuries. Have they got people fit? For example, Man City, very much Sergio Aguero reliant. He's been off around the other side of the world. Mm-hmm. So he'll be shagged out.
Yeah, but that's what they bought Wilfred Bony for, isn't it?
Oh, crikey, of course.
Yeah.
Wilfred Bony, this could be his first start. And he looked good when he came on last time when they absolutely devastated West Brom, didn't they?
Yeah, I think...
A 10-man West Brom.
They need him to start contributing, particularly for this running. I mean, that's what they bought him for. And look, they're not only, as you say, adrift of Chelsea... Could find themselves, in jeopardy of finishing in that final fourth spot. So,
right.
Meh, yeah.
What does that mean, James? Is it going to happen? What's the score going to be? Or what's the result going to be?
Well, let's. I'm whipped up in this frenzy of positivity now.
All right.
I'm stirred by it. So why don't we say Palace will pull another shock. City will flop on the road again.
Right.
And Selhurst Park will be bouncing. That's another truism.
Yeah, and for good reason.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Yeah. All right, well, after that, let's just towel ourselves down and come back with some important news about Chelsea Stoke. You just missed a bit over there, Barry. Oh, yeah, thanks. Good. Now, Chelsea Stoke. Hey, hello, I am not Mr. T, who writes in to us saying, after learning about all the heels and faces in this pod, do you know what that means, Nick?
Is that a wrestling thing?
Exactly. Goodies and baddies in wrestling are called heels and faces. Anyway, says I am not Mr. D. After learning about all the heels and faces in this pod, I wonder if football would be more entertaining if the away team were allowed to be heels and behave in a cartoonishly evil manner throughout the match. Give them free rein to put in a few dirty fouls behind the ref's back. Sneak extra players on, interrupt their opponent's pre-match press conference, so on and so on and so on. Surely Chelsea were made for this role. Who's with me? I think that's a brilliant idea.
I'd be all for it if they were allowed to use metal chairs. Smack around.
I think that's too far.
Oh, come on.
Too far, Nick.
Well, while you were reading that out, I was thinking, well, aren't we talking about Chelsea
here?
He said, yeah. I think Chelsea are already there.
Are they already there? Okay, now. Sorry, James.
No, I was just visualising various Chelsea players in wrestling gear.
Mm. Yeah, sort of. Stop, we'll have to get the towels out again.
The leotards and all greased up.
Yeah. Chelsea Stoke. Hey, Stoke beat them at the Britannia earlier this season. Do you remember that?
Maybe that's why they've given Mark Hughes a new contract.
Perhaps so. And, of course, former Chelsea man, so this will be a big game for him and that. It's a fixture that Stoke traditionally struggle in. Are they going to struggle this time, James? This was a game that you picked out as being particularly exciting. Why?
For the opposite reason, because I think Stoke can't be relegated and they can't get into Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So their season's particularly kind of done, unless I think all they're interested in is finishing the top half for a second successive season. And look at the gap that they've got on Palace. It's, what, 6 points. So they're on the slide. They're on the beaches. That's another.
Oh, yeah, in their flip-flops.
Yeah. That's another mid-table truism. And Chelsea, yeah, I think if they win this, I mean, I already think they've won the league, but I think they'll come out. It's interesting hearing Diego Costa talking in the international fortnight saying Mourinho told the players to just calm down, as though they weren't used to being in a position to win a league championship as a group, because much was made when they won the League Cup that a lot of the players at Chelsea at the moment haven't won a trophy apart from the old guard, Cech, Terry, etc. And maybe it's the same for these group of players as a group with Chelsea, because Diego Costa won the league with Atletico, Hazard won it with Lille, so they are used to being in these positions, but maybe not as all Chelsea players.
Right. I put it to you that they're not quite as home and hosed as you think. Were they to lose this game, that would put them in and say, for example, Man City would upset all footballing logic and win at Selhurst Park, then that would put Chelsea in potentially a very dangerous position, given that their next games are away at QPR. I know, but they do have a poor record at Loftus Road. Then they've got Man United, and then they've got Arsenal, who could be at that point snapping at their heels for top four. I don't know.
So what are you predicting,
Jimbo? I don't know. Clearly.
Jimbo predicts Chelsea choking title race.
Choking. Just like last year. Yeah. Here's a stat. The number of babies. No, it's not that one. Here's a stat. This is Andy Slee, and I've no idea if this is true or not. Andy Slee has tweeted this, and he says it's true. He says best shot conversion rate, percentage rate, in the Premier League this season. Who's in number one spot?
Jonathan Walters.
Well done, Barry. Yeah, 38.89% of shots he has scored with. In second place, Papiss Cisse. And in third place, and about 5 percentage points behind, Diego Costa. So in terms of the big gun on Saturday afternoon, it's very much the Potters who'll be unholstering it.
Or the most accurate shooters. So it'll be like a game of few chances but lots of goals.
All right, okay. So you're not excited about that one. Let's move on to the bottom then. Now, among the big questions are Burnley going to get themselves out of the bottom three? They are at home to Spurs Sunday lunchtime. Are Aston Villa, with that Old Trafford game, are they going to end up back in the bottom three? What are QPR going to do? They're away at West Brom. Right. Any of these games excite you particularly? We talked about Man United, Villa, Swansea, Hull, your team, James, your team. But they're in a rotten run of form, Hull, aren't they? They could be dropping into trouble as well. They're currently 3 points off the drop.
Poor old Brucey. Did you see the coverage he got from the Daily Mail? He was just enjoying a holiday in Barbados.
Right.
Maybe he has let himself go a little bit. He has got that little portly belly now. But, you know, don't bother the man when he's jumping off a diving board.
Yeah, know? Absolutely. Absolutely. In leak news, by the way, we've been up through his ceiling, found no trace at all of whatever's causing the leak. You know, more when we know more.
But he doesn't live there, so presumably he's not in Barbados because...
No, we haven't forced him out of house and home. But, there are serious issues for him and the leaks that he has to worry about, the ones in his defence as he takes on a Swansea side who...
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, really,
about.
Barry? My bathroom's leaking into his flat.
Oh, yeah. I see.
Yeah. Well, at least it did once, and we've been through the ceiling. Sorry about this, listeners. We've been through the ceiling and haven't found no sign of what that leak was. It's almost like it was ectoplasm or something. That in some ways would be a more rational explanation. These drops on the ceiling were.
Unless, I reckon it's revenge on your part for the...
For the what? The banister?
The banister,
the banister of shame. Right, okay. Anyway.
Who was the bad guy in Ghostbusters? The big kind of Pillsbury Dough kind of dude. Marshmallow Man. Okay.
Right.
I don't know. Steve Bruce. The Daily Mail went for...
Are you making a Marshmallow Man Ghostbusters Steve Bruce comparison, James? Yeah. That's not very kind.
Well, you went with ectoplasm, which...
Yeah, I didn't call him... anyway, all right. Oh, Jelovic is out for a month. So I'm...
They did score goals against Chelsea.
That's true.
Abel Hernandez, and we've seen Ndoye make an impact since he's been there. But so he was actually quite encouraged by that display. But as you said, all a bit leaky.
Well, here are the other games. West Brom QPR, Burnley Spurs. Spurs won't be looking forward to that one, will they? Although they have got all their England boys... You know, fresh back and boosted by their good performances by and large, no? I mean, Townsend in particular. Kane as well. Yeah?
I don't think there have been that many Spurs players on the pitch for an England team since 1972.
Really?
Yeah. It was great to see them all celebrating together, actually. That must be... that is Tim Sherwood's work, isn't it? Again, the Lionheart Tim. Doing it for his country, not only for his club.
Absolutely. So, Burnley Spurs, do you want to call that for us, James?
I am sounding a little bit like Sean Dyche today. So,
right.
I would say...
Is that a sign, do you think?
It could be an omen.
All right. Well, you remember that Spurs last time out struggled with another relegation team, Leicester, eventually managing to make it 4-3 and take the points. But I reckon there at Turf Moor, that could be a bridge too far almost for them. What, Barry?
I'm just thinking that James sounds more like Neil from The Young Ones.
Do you think?
Than Sean Dyche.
Well, he looks like
exactly. He has similar hair as well.
Yeah. Younger listeners will struggle with that one, but hey. Okay. That leaves West Brom QPR, Leicester West Ham.
Joey Barton's back for QPR
from
his spell on the naughty step.
He was back last time as well.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Are you sure?
Yeah, reasonably.
Okay. But, I mean, their form away from home is so atrocious.
Barry, their form anywhere. Did you know that they have lost 9 of their last 10 games? In fact, no one in British professional football, in the Football League essentially, is in worse form. And Scotland. Oh, yeah, British, right. So Scotland as well.
They've somehow managed to get worse since getting rid of Harry Redknapp, which is quite a feat.
He's a tactical genius.
Poor old Chris Ramsey.
Sam Allardyce has been linked with that job, isn't he?
Has he?
And Mark Warburton. But I think Allardyce has been seen as a possible front runner for it.
Right. On that exciting mistaken identity thing, which in no way was talked about too much following West Brom's game against Man City, it does turn out that Craig Dawson, who should have got the red card, is going to be suspended for it.
Okay.
Yeah. So, well done, the authorities. They got that one. Burnley Spurs, West Brom QPR. Are QPR going to get the points that they surely must have this weekend? Otherwise, No.
West Brom have won 4 in a row at home, so.
Okay.
Can't see it.
And they keep so many clean sheets, it's very difficult.
West Brom.
Yeah.
Charlie Austin scored a hat trick for the R's against West Brom in the earlier meeting this season. And that was before Tony Pulis arrived, back in the days of. Who was their previous manager?
Alan Irvine.
That seems like years ago. Years. Wow. Anyway, Leicester West Ham. Leicester going to get some points then, Nick? Barry, you were talking up Leicester's chances of staying up. Are they going to get a win here? Yeah, you were. You so
just
were.
Inventing things that Barry has
No,
said.
Barry said, when I said, you know, maybe a couple of the bottom three positions haven't been decided yet. He went, well, Sunderland got out of...
I said it can be done.
It can be done.
They have proved it can be. I didn't say Leicester were going to do it.
No, and I didn't say you did. Sorry about this. we had to fight in front of you.
You almost sounded like you were going to do the accent then, which would have been sensational.
Kind of tempted.
What
I was
accent?
It's, your accent. Oh.
No concern of mine. If
no, James. No. Stop it.
Anyway.
Go on. I want to hear this.
No. So... what I said you said was that you were talking up their chances of staying up, in the sense that you were saying they had chances, which, yeah. But anyway, let's get back to this bit. Leicester West Ham. Barry, you're saying it's not over for Leicester, but might it be after this game if West Ham wake up?
It could well be, yeah. They obviously need, at risk of stating the blinding obvious, they need to start picking up points quickly. I said earlier, Sunderland have shown it can be done, but... that Sunderland escape last year was very much the exception rather than the norm. And I personally think Leicester just aren't good enough to be in the Premier League. You know, in this, it's not a very good division, and they're currently the worst team in it. You know, they're 3 points behind QPR, who are awful.
It's the best league in the world, Barry.
Oh, let's not go there.
I quite enjoy
the Championship is a better league. For a start.
Well, we'll talk about the Championship in just a second because it's very thrilling, Nick.
I'm quite enjoying watching Nigel Pearson unravelling towards the end of the season because he had that fight with who was it he punched on the.
He grabbed him by the throat. Very WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And then he called a reporter a bad word in a press conference a couple of weeks ago because he asked a question that he didn't like.
Mm.
But the reporter in question is an Irish fella who's a very nice guy, but I can totally understand how he would get under.
He's really tall, though, as well. He's not the kind of person you would want to kind of antagonise.
I think if you're Nigel Pearson, as wild dogs in the Carpathian Mountains will testify, there's very little that's going to intimidate you.
He looks like a youth rugby coach with a dark past.
Who, Nigel Pearson?
Nigel Pearson, yeah.
Wow, it's not a genre that I'm particularly familiar with.
Yeah.
The Fox Hunter.
Oh, I see, that kind of thing.
But this famous story about him in the Carpathian Mountains beating off a
let's
white,
ask the question.
Wild dogs with a stick.
Not in that way, but
he was hiking alone. We only have his word for this,
well,
don't
there
we?
There must be some.
I'm not saying, I would like to say, if you're listening, Nigel Pearson, I'm not calling you a liar, but, yeah, you know.
No, there must have been somebody else there. No?
You know.
Have you ever had to fight off?
Phil Brown, perhaps. Suggests pretty severe.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like Nigel Pearson's the kind of scary loner who would go wandering off in the mountains on his own. I'm sure he had companions.
I occasionally go walking on Clapham Common. I've never beaten any.
Okay. Well, let's just finish. Since you mentioned Sunderland some time ago in the bit that we'll be actually using, let's finish off our Premier League previews with arguably the biggest game of the weekend, the biggest fixture, Sunderland against Newcastle.
You've already stated that Arsenal-Liverpool was a bigger game.
Yeah.
I was going to take exception, but you're probably right, to be honest.
There's
more at stake in that game. But
survival's on the line here, though, Barry.
For Sunderland, very much so. They're hoping to record their fifth successive victory over Newcastle, which would be a pretty remarkable achievement. Even though Newcastle aren't particularly good team.
They've lost three in a row. Momentum does seem to be very much with Sunderland for this one. For one thing, Stephen Fletcher is in fantastic form, getting a hat-trick during the international break.
You've no idea how pleased I was to see Stephen Fletcher get a hat-trick against Gibraltar. Probably the highlight of my international break, which speaks volumes, really. But hopefully he can carry that form into this game.
Plus, manager Dick Advocaat has had 10 days to work with, well, most of his team. Obviously, Fletcher was away with Scotland. But so this is where we really get to see, you know, if they can have this kind of new manager bounce under the Dutchman.
The black cat bounce.
Yeah.
I suppose. I mean, Sunderland on this great record of, what, four straight wins in this fixture, which has never happened, which perhaps give you the impression that it's going to end. But I just think Advocaat's probably a better manager than Carver.
Right.
Newcastle also have an awful lot of injuries, and I think the first choice central defensive pairing is out. Papiss Cissé is suspended for gobbing on Johnny Evans. Mm. And I'm pretty confident of a Sunderland win, which leads me to believe they'll almost certainly lose.
No, Barry.
Because I'm never confident about a Sunderland win.
All right. Well, there you go.
This match, actually, there's been a bit of a hoo-ha up in the northeast because it's scheduled for 4 o'clock on Sunday. So I believe the police are concerned that there will be shenanigans.
Horses being punched.
Before and after.
Yeah. Mm. Let's hope not, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed for all those attending the game, be they equine or otherwise. Now, do you know what? We've only got to miss the fact that Everton and Southampton are playing each other. And we'd better mention that, otherwise their fans will be on the warpath.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pella scored his first goal in a couple of months in that.
Absolutely.
Italy game, didn't he?
And Italian press were saying, bring him back to Italy. He deserves to come back to Italy. And he said, no thanks, actually. I'm actually pretty happy in the Premier League, where there's none of the normal crazy arguments that you guys have all the time. And by the way, can you fix your stadiums up? Which is pretty good précis of the problems surrounding the Italian game. So anyway, Everton don't have too much to play for. They are 9 points clear of the drop. Southampton are in sixth place, only 1 point behind Liverpool. Is this, where is this game being played?
Everton.
It's at Goodison Park, is it? All right. What do you think, Nick?
I've got no strong feelings on the game. No strong feelings.
Okay.
I suppose Lukaku will miss this game because he had to withdraw from the Belgian squad, which means his nice little partnership that he had going on with Aruna Kone is broken up. But Naismith is a very capable foil for him. So,
really?
Everton just can't keep clean sheets. So
they do have a very good record against Southampton.
Hmm.
They've won five of the last six meetings. And I can never, you know, this Shawnee's a big one for telling us, you know, the form that goes back 10 years or whatever counts. And there doesn't seem to be any particular reason why it should, but it seems to, nevertheless.
Of course, speaking of going back years, Barry, with regard to Southampton, you famously went to see Matt Letizier and weren't rewarded with any biscuits, I believe. Oh, no, that was Kevin Davies who didn't give you biscuits. But what did Matt Letizier?
Mrs. Matt, Angela Letizier gave me bourbon cream.
Oh, right, okay.
Emma Davies didn't give me any biscuits.
Right. Bourbon cream's with a double chocolate layer with a kind of chocolatey cream in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Did you kick off and perhaps throw the cup of tea when you were denied biscuits?
Well, I didn't ask for biscuits, so I wasn't actually denied biscuits. Mm.
Oh, right. The producer Ben wanted me to mention this because he thought you were going to segue into the fact that Matt Letizier is going to be on Countdown. Is he hosting it, by the way?
I don't think so.
He's going to be a contestant, says producer Ben.
Is that Jeff Stelling clearly taking over Countdown? Is he just going to replace everyone on Countdown with Soccer Saturday?
Jeff Stelling still presenting Countdown?
No, it's Nick Hewer now.
Isn't it?
For goodness sake.
Jeff Stelling.
Sorry. Tell you what, let's have some music and we'll move on to other stuff. Right, now, Chippy's Curler says, Dear Pod, talking of the famous Likely Lads episode, which Ian McIntosh was doing the other day. It was John Ashdown.
With regard to the wrestling.
Of course. Talking of the famous Likely Lads episode, which John Ashdown was doing the other day, with regard to his wrestling night in with producer Ben, that's watching the wrestling. He says, Chippy's Curler says, I stumbled upon an ingenious and, more importantly, free website, which will show you the latest Premier League results, but hide the score of your own team. It is called Hide My Score. Please pass on to assist any modern-day and possibly global Terry and Bobs. Nice one. Thanks, Chippy's Curler. David Ball says, just out of interest, do Fleetwood Town have any Fleetwood Mac-related chants? Camp As You Like replies, more to the point, to Fleetwood Mac, have any town-related songs? And Contiki replies them both, saying, sell me pies, sell me sweet little pies.
Bravo, bravo.
Is what they might sing at half-time. So that's nice. Anyway, now, I did say that we were going to talk about what's happening in other leagues as we head towards the final push, etc. and so on. Championship, Nick, you're a big Forest fan, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Yes.
All right, and it's. I mean, it's too late for you guys, isn't it, under Doogie Freeman?
It is too late, yes, with loss against Norwich.
But some of you other chaps might just make it. Bournemouth, who are leading the promotion race by a point, are away at Ipswich, who are down in sixth, and have terrific home form. This is a big test here for Eddie Howe and his promotion-chasing Cherries. Ipswich are really strong at home, the Tractor Boys, but remarkably, the Cherries have got more goals on the road than they have at home.
Yes.
Right.
There you go.
What's the standout game? Because it's one of those weekends, this seems to happen a lot, where all the top teams are playing each other. Watford, who are in second place.
These games are all on Friday, aren't they?
Because are they all on Friday?
Friday's national holiday.
Of course, yeah.
Playing on Monday.
In Blighty,
yeah.
And then they're playing again on Monday.
Right,
so.
Okay. Friday and Monday.
There's some cracking games on Friday. It's Ipswich, Bournemouth, Derby, Watford.
That's a big game for Derby, isn't it?
But it's fifth v second, so it's big for both of them.
But Derby, with their kind of negative momentum, dropping out of the...
Derby seems to be finding new and interesting ways to bottle it at every possible opportunity. Did we all see the own goal that they scored?
No.
Against Wolves.
No.
It was, seek it out. It was absolutely magnificent.
Well, tell us about it, Nick.
Their fullback sliced the ball straight up in the air. It was going towards the goal, and for some reason, the keeper Lee Grant tried to punch it and punched it straight into the net.
Gotcha.
What was also excellent about it is the defender, Richard Keogh, tried to foul a Wolves player and ended up just falling on the floor.
All right. Good stuff. Okay, well, will they do any better when they host Watford? What's the other game you were going to mention there, Barry? Wolves, perhaps, who will be, as Nick was mentioning, at Forest. You excited about that one, Nick?
Not really, because I think Forest will lose.
Okay.
Wolves have looked reasonably good in recent, particularly against Derby. And yeah, I think they'll actually sneak into the playoffs, possibly at the expense of Derby.
Really? Wow. And Middlesbrough, who are in third place and got beaten 3-0 by Bournemouth last time out, have the chance to go top. They'll be hosting Wigan, who are really in trouble down at the bottom. They're 5 points from safety with, well, how many games left to go? Is it seven?
Seven games
left to go. All right, so, you know, we've seen it done before. Sunderland, of course. Now,
I think Blackpool can get relegated this weekend.
They can get relegated on Friday. If the results go against them on Friday, they'll go down.
Right.
How the mighty, well, kind of mighty, have fallen.
Tangerine nightmare. In France, it's as exciting as the championship in France, Le Championnat. Only 2 points separating the top three. Right. Now, what's the situation in other nations? Well, in Germany, there's a lot of excitement, of course, because you've got Der Klassiker, which is Bayern Munich taking on Borussia Dortmund, but a massive gap between them. Dortmund are all the way down in 10th place. They're 12 points off the Champions League position, so that doesn't look like it's happening. Bayern are 10 points ahead of second place Wolfsburg, but it's, you know, it's still going to be a big game. I think that's on Saturday. In Italy, very early on Saturday, is that for reasons of public order, the Roma-Napoli game is being played at 11 o'clock in the morning?
I wouldn't be surprised, considering what happened prior to the Coppa Italia final last May.
In which a fan was shot.
In which a fan was shot and later died, and the man taken into custody and arrested for it was an ex-Roma ultra. And there's still a lot of disputed evidence as to whether that group of Napoli fans were ambushed and whether it was one man alone or whether it was several other assailants who may or may not have been linked to Roma, even though it was a Coppa Italia final between Napoli and Fiorentina held at the Stadio Olimpico in Rome.
Right. And that's a huge game because Roma are only 1 point ahead of Lazio. Roma in second place, Lazio in third. And then you've got a bit of a gap, 4 point gap down to the three teams who are chasing a top three spot, Sampdoria, Napoli and Fiorentina. Fiorentina are going to be up against Sampdoria, Roma, Napoli. Barry, sorry?
Well, the 11 o'clock kickoff is ridiculous. Unless, you know, you've got to go and watch your kid or, you know, your mate's kid or whatever play football, no game should be played at 11 o'clock on Saturday.
All right.
It's wrong.
I don't know, is it?
It is 12 o'clock in Italy.
Oh, of course. Sorry, I've been reading the times in... Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, so 12 o'clock, that's... You know, but it's lunchtime, effectively. That's lunchtime. Mm. All right. Mike Nikolaidis says, can you provide an update on Milan's stadium plans and potential new investors? Any news on that front?
Only that this Thai entrepreneur, Bite Shibol, is doing due diligence and has a memorandum of understanding with Berlusconi in that they will pay 250 million euro for a minority stake.
Mm.
Berlusconi has between now and the end of the season to say yes to that, and if he reneges on it, he has to pay 10% of that 250 million, which would be a sizable chunk of Milan's transfer budget, probably. Mm. But there's also other interest from China as well.
Mr. Pink
and a fizzy drinks.
Ginseng infused fizzy drinks, yeah. Mm. That's the name of the beverage, Mr. Pink, and that's how he comes by his name.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, I think they are waiting perhaps for them to get the green light on this new stadium, get planning permission, because that's what they're waiting for.
And when would that happen?
I think it should be by the end of this month.
Right. Okay.
So...
Okay, super. Now, let's just finish off then with a quick word about France, where it's every bit as tight as the Championship, maybe even tighter, just 2 points separating the top three. It's now PSG on top of the pile, then Lyon, then Marseille in third place, and Marseille host PSG this weekend in Le Classique. Who's excited about that one?
Yes, yeah.
Right, Nick, yeah. Also, Saint-Étienne are taking on Monaco. No, Monaco taking on Saint-Étienne. This Friday, which I just found out I'm going to be covering for BT Sport. That's very exciting. But you and I are going to be together, James, to do Le Classique Sunday night.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any other football on, it being Easter Sunday.
No. I mean, it's the fiercest rivalry in France. We should put it that way. You know, those snobby Parisians against those salty sea dog Marseillais. And the Velodrome is, even with this great refurbishment, it's just... Fantastic atmosphere.
Mm. And of course,
will football's Joey Barton be joining you in the studio too?
I'm not sure, actually, if Joey will be with
expert
us.
Insights.
That would be great, but I'm not sure if he will. I do know that it should be a chance to see whether Marseille can derail the Parisians and whether they'll go back on top, whether they'll go on top, whether Lyon will go on top. Yeah. Anyway.
The old lady's still on top in Italy, of course.
Of course she is. Of course. Yeah. Now, that's it for today's Football Weekly Extra. We'll be back on Monday. Hopefully you'll join us then. Even though it's Easter Monday, we'll be back. How about that? Anyway, hopefully you'll join us then. We'll sign off for now by saying thanks to producer Ben. Thank you, Barry. Thank you, James Horncastle. Thank you, Nick Miller.
Thank you, James.
Look forward to your return soon, I hope. Soon. And thank you, listener. Have a super Easter. Happy Easter, yes. And we'll speak to you on Monday.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the renowned website builder that helps you share your story with the world in the most beautiful way. Establish a personal brand, portfolio, or e-commerce store at squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.